going to Blue Haven and spending a few weeks. It's not vacation. So just so y'all are aware, it is not vacation. Alright, so don't think I've taken my vacation, because I haven't. It's interesting, this year we showed up kind of tired with everything else going on in our lives, but it's just amazing how at the end of just shy of 2 weeks, how you're just exhausted, honestly. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, you're just exhausted. And you're reminded of just the struggle that's in life. You see it displayed in a unique way with teenagers. And one of the things I love is we had 25, fixed to be juniors through graduated, just graduated in our class. And just you get rid of the distractions of the world, and it's amazing what God can do and what He can bring out in life. So it was great. I know we had some kids there. Abby gave me an opportunity to baptize her. I haven't baptized someone in a little while, and it was special for me, and I know it was special for her and her family as well. So grateful for that opportunity. But here we are. I have no idea what y'all had from the pulpit last week. I know what you had 2 weeks ago from Hunter. At least I think I did. I should have probably asked, but I didn't. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 7 this morning, as we continue on this idea of the Sermon on the Mount. We appreciate all our visitors who have come and spent some time in the summers where it's supposedly cooler. I'm guessing it's still cooler, even though if you're here, it feels super hot. We appreciate our seasonal membership and those popping in and out over the course of the summer. But as we've been going through the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus has kind of been turning on its head a lot of ideology that sometimes we look at in Inception and we're trying to grasp the concept or try to see what Jesus is talking about. And don't forget that the stage has been set, that Jesus is really talking to his 12. At the very beginning of this, he sits down and he's with his 12. And a lot of people are hearing this message, but he is genuinely delivering this to his 12. Now we get into a text that, I'll be honest with you, I think we ping-pong back and forth on this idea. So we're going to talk about it this morning. Let me read Matthew chapter 7, starting with verse 1 through verse 5. Judge not that you do not... that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use it will be measured to you. Why do you seek the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take out the speck out of your eye, when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. So we hear this text, and as I was reflecting back, and again, don't forget that the Sermon on the Mount should bring us to a place of the higher calling, that Jesus is calling us to live differently than we would otherwise live. And so when we hear this term of judging, this thing has gone both directions in my life. You know, I'm 50 years old. And I can remember where everything I did, I felt judged. Anybody else? Just two. But hey, you're with me. I appreciate that. And just this condemnation, right? Of just, man, it just was hard. Sometimes you felt like you stepped out of step just a little bit and the hammer came down, right? And so we kind of went from that place to a way more complacent place. And I've heard this a lot. In the last 10 years of my life, whoa, I'm not the judge. You know, I'm not the judge. And we've gotten to this place of just like so fearful, too. And so it's like, it's these two extremes. You guys have heard me talk about extremes before. and how worship and truth and not having any spirit, not having the Holy Spirit involved in your worship, how sometimes it can be just this one directional. But if we have worship that's just in spirit and it's not connected to any truth, it can go this way. And oftentimes we're these extremes. And I feel like a concept like judging, it is kind of this. It's in extremes. And so as we look at what Jesus specifically says about this concept, I want us to challenge to find in this message, because there's a lot of messages throughout Scripture that talks about judging. And we derive a lot of our attitude based on some of the Scriptures that we see about judging. But it's a Greek word, and I think it's important to break down what this word is. Because it's like we dealt with some tough words in our class this year in Blue Haven. Tough. When I say tough words, submission. I'm kind of 50-50 on that word. You know, there's words that we see in Scripture that we just struggle with. And so I have my class do this, and I'm going to do it this morning. We'll try it and see how it works. See how it works with adults. Worked really well with teenagers, but I don't know about y'all. When you hear the word judge, does it bring in you a positive or a negative emotion? Mostly negative, right? And so I think it's important that we kind of shift our ideology about that word. And so with that being said, I think it's important that we break this word down. This was fascinating to me. The Greek word used for judgment is krino. And krino can have two separate meanings, but they're both kind of bottled up in this idea of judgment. On one, it means to discern. And on another, it is to condemn. And so here, in one word, is wrapped up two concepts. And now if we break those two concepts down, does discern give you a positive or a negative feeling? More positive, right? How about condemn? More negative. And so wrapped up in this one word is kind of both concepts of discernment and yet condemning on this hand, and both bring. And so when Jesus says don't judge, I think more ideally what he's trying to communicate to the people that are sitting around in this circle is, hey, it's not your job to condemn. It's not your job to condemn. And so, because I hear this so often, I've heard people say, hey, I'm not the judge. And I'm like, well, I know you're not the judge, but in the same breath, we still have a responsibility to truth, don't we? And so in this responsibility of truth, what is our place in this idea of judging? Because here specifically, Jesus is saying, hey, don't do it. But then he says, the same measure that you use will be measured against you. The same, in the same way. And so oftentimes, I want to take us to Luke chapter 7. Because I think we get in this story, I think you kind of get a little bit of this idea of what Jesus is talking about. And so in Luke chapter 7, I may be slower than y'all. I think in verse 36, but I might be wrong on that. Nope, 36. One of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him, and when he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table, and behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that he was reclined at a table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment, and standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears, and wiped them with her hair, with the hair of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him. For she's a sinner. And Jesus answered him, saying, Simon, I have something to say to you. So in this story, I love how Luke kind of portrays this. He portrays it as this Pharisee who has invited Jesus in to recline with him. And then the first, as he introduces the next character into the scene, it's this woman, and she's a sinner. The Pharisee's not a sinner, but she is. And so the introduction to this woman is, hey, this sinner comes in and wipes his feet with the tears in her hair and anoints him with this highly expensive perfume and all of these things. And I can imagine this Pharisee is sitting there going, man, she doesn't even know what she's doing. And Jesus may be clearly not who he says he is, because if he was, he would know who it is that's doing this to him. And so I want you to see in this moment that there is a judgment happening. All right? The Pharisee is judging this woman for what she is doing. Not only for what she's doing, who she is. She is clearly the outsider in the story. And the outsider comes into the midst of the in people. And then the in people, she starts doing this thing. And it's frustrating Simon the Pharisee. And Jesus is just allowing it to happen. Why would he allow this ungodly, unholy sinner to do the things that she's doing? And interestingly enough, Jesus gives us the answer right in this text. He says, I have something to say to you. And he answered, say it, teacher. A certain moneylender has two debtors, one owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled both debts. Now, which of them will love him more? Simon answered, well, the one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt. And he said to him, you have judged rightly. Then turning to the woman, he said to Simon, do you see this woman? Why don't you hear what Jesus is fixing to say? Because I think it's profound. He says, I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet. But she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For she loved much, but he who is forgiven little loves little. What I want you to see in this story is that the customary expectation, when you invited someone into your home, all the things that Jesus mentioned, it wasn't the above and beyond, it was kind of what was expected. When you were invited into somebody's home, they would greet you with a kiss. They would create this washing station so you could wash your dirty feet. All the things that this guy should have been doing, he did none of those things. And so when we go back to this idea of taking the log out of your eye and the speck, I mean, we've heard this text before, and I think oftentimes we're like, I don't know what it means, or we struggle with the idea of judging, whether it's being too extreme on one hand or too complacent on the other hand. I want you to remember this story, because in this story, this man he's not judging himself by the same standard in which he is judging her. He withheld from Jesus what is expected as a house guest. And so as Jesus speaks, he's telling Simon, the Pharisee, saying, listen, I need you to understand something. You didn't do anything for me. Nothing. But yet you feel compelled to pass judgment on this lady for doing everything for me. For doing the things that you chose not to do. And so I think what Jesus is trying to communicate when in the Sermon on the Mount is, listen, this idea of judgment, there is a place for judgment. But the place for judgment comes through a humble place. A humble place. Oftentimes, in life, let me ask you a question. Is it easier to see somebody else's flaws or your own? Man, I got a few chuckles there. Man, because we're problem identifiers, aren't we? I mean, we can spot those from a half mile away. And yet, in the midst of spotting those, we have a tendency to forget about our own. And so it's not that there is not a place for judgment. It's that that place is reserved for circumstances in which you have identified something. And that even in the midst of judgment, I want you to understand that this word means two things. There's discernment, and there's condemnation. And I think the separation of those two ideas gives us a hint of what Jesus is talking about here. He said, listen, it is not your job to condemn, but to restore. I think sometimes when we pass this kind of, the condemnation kind of judgment, we're just very dismissive of people, aren't we? We just say, hey, you're out. You have gone too far. You've done this, and it takes you out of His grace. And we get to this place where we're so consumed with wrongdoing that oftentimes we don't see the guy back in the mirror. And Jesus is saying, by that measure you will be judged. Do you have any compassion in your heart? Isn't it interesting that Jesus, when He comes onto the scene, this is who He embodies. Think about Judas for just a nanosecond. Do you think Jesus knew Judas was going to deny him, betray him? Did He treat him any differently? Just loved him. We talked in class in 1 Peter chapter 3 about this idea of submission in marriage and staying in your lanes, and that's a tough concept, especially with the generation that we're in. But you have to give a place for a person to land. Too often times in our lives, we're so judgmental that we don't create a landing spot. When this person that we have pushed out or alienated or condemned, and we've taken that upon ourselves, when they're searching and seeking, and we're going to see that later in the Sermon on the Mount, when they're searching and they're seeking for something, and we've squeezed them out. Philip Yancey wrote a book years ago, What's So Amazing About Grace? That's what popped into my head. I'll have to think about that for a second. It starts off with the story of a lady that was in prostitution, and she was seeking to get out of this lifestyle. And in the midst of her trying to seek to get out of this lifestyle, someone tells her, have you gone to the church? And she goes, ooh, man, I already feel bad enough as it is. No landing spot. Jesus is sitting there going, I've created a place for you to land. When you come to me and you see the grace and the compassion that I offer, I've given you a place to land. I was going to try to do this, but... And so kind of the idea is this, since I forgot a mirror. When you're casting judgment, my challenge would be that you look at yourself first. Because so oftentimes in our lives, we're professionals at poking out the problems of other people and really not looking at ourselves. So what does this self-reflection do for us in our lives? It creates a humility. And a humility that is going to do something in our lives. This humility is going to help me talk to you about a struggle going on in your life from a place of compassion, from a place of grace. The same place that Jesus is going to say, hey, come to me. I offer this. And so as we see, don't judge, Jesus is telling His disciples, man, you guys are judge and jury so oftentimes with our actions and our lives. You're condemning a person outside of my blessing when that is not your place to condemn them outside of my blessing. I need you guys to understand that this stuff is wrapped up in this idea of love. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If you didn't see yourself just in my little mirror, just pretend you did. Starting at verse 1, if I speak in tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a noise of gongs or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I'm nothing. If I give away all that I have, if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. I want you to hear what Jesus is referencing when he goes into this section in the Sermon on the Mount about judging others. I think it just looks different if it's done in love. I think we've gotten so complacent that we're so fearful of calling someone and saying, listen, man, we need to approach people not in a condemning way, but approach people in a restorative way. But it shouldn't stop us from approaching people. And I think that's kind of where our society has moved to. When I was a kid, it was over here, where you couldn't do anything without getting harshly judged. And now as a society has kind of gone a different direction, it's gone all the way over here, where it's like, man, I'm not the judge. I'm not going to hold you to a higher standard. And I don't think that's right either. I think it's our responsibility to be able to call things out in our lives. And I think if we're doing it from a place of humility, which means I have self-evaluated myself too, and I'm approaching this situation, Jason, not to just rip you for doing wrong, but understanding that, hey, there's something in your life that I think needs some guidance, and I'm going to do that lovingly. I'm going to offer my support. I'm going to offer my help. That is discernment. And what I think Jesus is calling us to is don't stop raising people up, and don't stop being me. I think that's the end of the story. Don't stop being me. I love these people, even when they were doing wrong. And I would challenge that. And I would be creative with how I would do that. I'd tell this parable. I'd tell Simon about these two guys that had different debts and they both got canceled. I would tell Simon, though, that his debt may be less than this woman's. It's still debt. It's still debt. And it still needs to be forgiven. I would tell Simon that if you looked at this woman and evaluated yourself first, you would see that you didn't do anything that you were supposed to do. And then maybe how you dealt with or thought about this other lady would not have the same harshness to it that it did in your thoughts. Because through that evaluation, you're going, man, I didn't even do what I was supposed to do. All of a sudden, it changes from judgment to conviction of self. And I think sometimes we need to hear that message. We need to hear the message that, man, we need to be a lot more reflective on what we're doing. We need to become professionals at identifying the wrongs or struggles in our own lives. And through that process, it will help guide us into other people's lives. But taking a seat of a Pharisee and pronouncing judgment on someone and not considering your own flaws is a dangerous slope. It's one of judgment. It's one of condemnation. And I don't feel like it is our right to condemn someone. I do feel like it is our right to discern life and approach people to restore them. And so as you think about this text this morning, next week we're going to get into this crazy, crazy stuff about dogs and pigs and pearls. It's crazy. I mean, it's going to be fun. But it's going to be tied to this idea. So as we continue through the Sermon on the Mount, we challenge us to understand that don't be complacent. I think the message for today's society is don't be complacent. Don't pass on an opportunity to offer grace but correction in people's lives. But do it to yourself first. We've gotten into a world where the whole world around us is falling deeper and deeper into a negative place. And instead of us saying or doing anything or challenging each other to be better, we just kind of hunker down and say, man, I'm glad that's not me. And Jesus is saying, it might be you, because you're not doing anything. So how we judge and how we discern and how we articulate that word means a lot. Care enough about other people to restore them to the grace that you enjoy. That's a beautiful place for us to all live, in a redemptive place of Jesus Christ. This morning I want to challenge you all, if there's anything this body can do, man, just let me know.